Welcome to New World Notes, a series that explores the gap between the America we want and the America they're trying to make us settle for, and how we the people can reestablish our commonwealth and reclaim our democracy. Edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Hey, remember DU? Now I know. If you're on the men's lacrosse team, you'll say, isn't that supposed to be DUI? I think I earned a couple last semester. If you're a blonde, you'll say, oh, like sure, Delta Upsilon, great fraternity. The guys are all good-looking, and they all have, like, really nice cars. Though they're a little kinky once they get you alone, if, like, you know what I mean. No, but please keep it to yourself. No, Kyle and Muffy, we're talking about depleted uranium, a.k.a. Uranium-238. It's a waste product produced in huge quantities when you enrich uranium to make military or civilian nuclear bombs. Civilian nuclear bombs are sometimes known by the euphemism nuclear power plants. You may have heard of them under that name. The bad news is it would cost a fortune to bury this nuclear waste for the 2 billion years necessary. The good news is you don't have to. The stuff is so dense and heavy, it's great for making artillery shells, anti-tank rounds, missile warheads, and so on. Shoot 'em off in Iraq and let the Hajis worry about removing the stuff. There are a couple disadvantages to using DU, though. For one, it kills the soldiers on both sides of the battle, and in many cases their wives, and their children that haven't even been conceived yet. And it kills civilians for miles around, including their unconceived children. It makes the local water unfit to drink and the air unsafe to breathe, possibly forever. And its use constitutes not only nuclear warfare, but a war crime on 4 counts. Just for the record. In July, on a local community station, I heard a very good interview with the illustrious young journalist Dar Jamail. Jamail talked for a couple minutes on the clobbering with DU munitions U.S. forces inflicted on the city of Fallujah in November 2004, and the high rates of birth defects and cancers now appearing in the city's surviving citizens. Surviving, but probably not too long, thanks to the great victory the U.S. won over the healthcare system of Iraq. And I thought, years back, we heard a lot about DU, but not much recently. So what's up? So I poked around, read, listened to some current discourse on the subject, and discovered the situation was even worse than I had thought, which, believe me, doesn't happen all that often. So, the first of 2 programs on depleted uranium. This week we'll feature those brief remarks by Dar Jamail, plus a longer talk by former Army DU expert Doug Rocky, with annotations, marginal commentary, and an afterword by yours truly, and a wartime adventure song by David Rovix. It's time for me to shut up and let Doug Rocky get a word in edgewise. Here he is.
With the completion of the ground war, I was reassigned to the depleted uranium assessment team and as a health physicist to clean up all the uranium contamination caused by deliberate U.S. use during friendly fire and combat incidents to ensure our troops had medical care. I was recalled to active duty again from where I was at the University of Illinois in 1994 as director of the Depleted Uranium Project. My specific taskings to develop all of the training materials, educational and training materials, that were required to ensure safe operations, recovery from UC uranium munitions, and also to develop all the environmental cleanup procedures necessary to clean up contamination after it's been used during testing, military operations, or research. We, as a part of this sync, went out to the Nevada test site, Mercury, Nevada, which is the United States Department of Energy research site, and actually burned, blew up, and destroyed multiple pieces of equipment and other types of items with uranium munitions to determine what is the extent of contamination, what is required for protection, i.e. gas mask and chemical suits, and how do you clean it up? First-hand experience. Blow stuff up and find out what happens.
Mm-hmm. And what did you find out when you were there?
We found out rapidly that the uranium contamination was so extensive in and around each and single incident that, as adopted by the United States Department of Defense, all military personnel must wear full respiratory and skin protection within probably 50 meters of any single incident. We also verified that the uranium munitions dust or oxides, which is called spalling, would be resuspended forever unless it was physically disposed of.
So the uranium aerosolizes into a uranium oxide, and the dust and debris that's created on impact, what kind of particle size are we talking about in that debris and that dust and aerosol?
Well, we know what happened to ourselves, that the gas masks are totally ineffective because the particle size is down in the range of 0.1, 0.2 micron. That is extremely small. And the best gas mask the Army has only handles probably 0.5, 0.6, 0.7 micron and above. And we verified what happened to us because all of our cells, all of us started getting sick with respiratory problems. We could smell and taste the uranium, even though we were in full protection, which indicates the stuff went right through it. And again, that's been known since 1943. When I talked to one of the last living gods of the Manhattan Project recently in the last year, he verified they knew that from day one.
I'd like to ask just a bit about now whether you're seeing extensive use of gas masks in this most recent fighting in Iraq.
To the best of our knowledge, first off, the gas masks that were issued to the troops were defective. The majority were defective, the M40 series. That had been confirmed by the United States General Accounting Office before this war started, and the military was told to replace those. In some instances, they did, but they were still not working adequately, and the filters didn't work. So we're seeing all over the area respiratory problems and rashes from exposures not only to uranium but all the other contaminants of war in our soldiers. In fact, too many have died already.
Okay.
And we're also seeing that in the Iraqis. That's been reported completely all over the place. First off, we shouldn't be using uranium munitions whatsoever because on impact it creates such fine oxides and dust that there is no effective respiratory or skin protection that can protect our soldiers. That, again, has been known clearly since 1943 from during the Manhattan Project when they started working with this. Well, the United Nations has already ruled that uranium munitions are illegal. The United Nations Subcommission on Human Rights, Justice CQN, has just released their final report on this, and it goes back many, many years. The other thing we have to just simply think, and this is common sense, you cannot take even 1 pound of solid uranium and throw it in anybody's church, backyard, schoolyard, factory, any place here in the United States, and yet the United States is throwing hundreds and hundreds of tons all over other areas. So as far as international law, the use of uranium munitions, if you distribute it in the public, violates our own United States laws, much less common sense laws and other United Nations regulations. Well, the Iraqi civilians have suffered extensively because of the use of uranium munitions. Again, when we know for a fact, as photographically proven and direct on-site measurements, for example, Scott Peterson of the Christian Science Monitor absolutely verified uranium munitions are scattered all over the city of Baghdad and all other areas. And the men, women, and children are working and around them. They're living in that area. They're picking the stuff up. And again, that's verified the Gulf War I, and it's also verified in the Balkans, and we have the same thing in Afghanistan. Radioactive dust spread all over the place for people inhale and ingest, and as absolutely verified and stated by the United States Department of Defense, will make food and water unusable.
Mm-hmm.
It's simple. You can't do it. Well, we had multiple directives. The first one that came in was from the Defense Nuclear Agency, written by Colonel Greg Lyle, that came in also in the beginning of March of 1991, that stated very specifically, the uranium dust is a health concern, but the spent penetrators and all this stuff is a serious health threat. And again, that makes common sense. Then at the same time, I received the famous Los Alamos Memorandum, which was a written directive that stated we should alter or doctor our reports, in other words, lie on our reports, to always sustain the use of uranium munitions. It goes back forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happened continuously. Even before Gulf War II, individuals at the Pentagon had stated specifically all the health and environmental effects warnings about uranium munitions was Iraqi propaganda to prevent their use. That's an absolute lie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the warnings came from within those of us who had the responsibility for the Department of Defense, and go back 50, 60 years that we can notify.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's, you know, the whole thing is we're going to take our radioactive waste, not just 1 pound, but hundreds and hundreds of tons, and throw it in somebody else's backyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the key thing is we've got to remember, uranium munitions are solid uranium-238. contaminated plutonium, neptunium, americium, and the stuff that came out of reactors, uranium-236. This is solid uranium waste. The health effects that we experienced right away absolutely match what was stated would occur in the Groves Memorandum in 43. We developed the respiratory problems, which has now been verified and diagnosed as reactive airway disease. That all started within a day to 2 days. And again, this is due to the particulate damage. Originally, the fine particles irritating the whole lung system, respiratory system, and then that was followed by the radiological damage due to tissue damage from alpha and beta particles, which then caused what's called calcified granulomas. In addition to that, the first team members started to develop cancer within 9 months. That was in the nasal and pharyngeal passageway, and then the lung cancers and first deaths from that started within 2 years.
Now, I remember hearing complaints about memory loss, numbness, nerve damage, sexual dysfunction. How does the uranium emission, is it toxicity or the radioactivity that creates these nerve problems?
It's a combination of both. You got a heavy metal poison, you got a radiological, so it's causing all kinds of damage. So, yes, it does cause the neurological damage. The fine motor function is gone. Radiation cataracts from substantial exposure to the radioactive particles. Again, you're in it all the time. You can't get it clean, so the eye is damaged. The sexual dysfunction is probably a whole combination. What we're looking at here is not just damage from uranium munitions, because on impact, the uranium, you have unexploded ordnance, you have biological waste, you have all of the organic, inorganic compounds, you have the petrochemical compounds, and then you have everything else that's already there. It's a toxic wasteland.
That was part one of our talk by Dr. Doug Rockey. That's R-O-K-K-E. Then one of the Army's leading experts on radioactive munitions generally, and depleted uranium in particular. He spoke in 2003 on a radio call-in program that originated at the Trap Rock Peace Center in Deerfield, Mass., in the Berkshires, not far from us. Some of the key points Rocky makes here, at least as I hear it, are 1. Depleted uranium must be the official mineral of hell. It kills you in 3 or 4 ways at once, because it's nanoparticles that can penetrate everywhere in your body, even into cells. These nanoparticles are so small they can pass right through every gas mask ever made. Also, Du is heavy metal, hence a chemical poison, like lead, cadmium, mercury. And it's radioactive. Rocky's point number 2. The government has known how deadly the stuff is ever since Satan himself popped up in Chicago to personally present samples of same to Enrico Fermi and Robert Oppenheimer. But seriously, the scientists at the Manhattan Project, circa 1943, the guys who developed the atom bomb, came to know a great deal about Du, also known as uranium-238. It's the largest waste product formed when you enrich uranium. To make enriched uranium, you get one part uranium-235 and about 100 parts of depleted uranium, uranium-238. Incidentally, don't let the word depleted lead you astray. It's slightly less radioactive than natural uranium, but it is radioactive and it is a poison, and it will give you cancers and all sorts of rotten stuff if you get near it for too long. And if you inhale its dust, believe me, you're going to get near it for too long. Anyway, the scientists at the Manhattan Project knew how deadly the stuff is, and they warned the higher-ups how it would have to be handled. Rocky's point number 3. Once again, and I guess it's time to start saying as usual, the Pentagon and its branch office, the Department of Energy, have shown contempt for the lives of American soldiers, the lives of workers in munitions plants, of American communities downstream or downwind from these plants, downstream or downwind from testing ranges, and they've showed contempt for the civilian people in whatever countries were shooting up at the moment. Bush sent the U.S. armed forces, including even the National Guard, off to a war where chemical and biological attacks were anticipated, and where our own use of radioactive munitions was certain. Sent them off with gas masks that the government knew were defective. Perhaps the government figured that, what the hell, even gas masks that work don't protect against DU, so what me worry? Well, there are additional gases and particles in the battlefield air that non-defective gas masks would have helped to keep out a soldier's lungs. But who cares about the cannon fodder? We don't mind poisoning them with Agent Orange in Vietnam. After Gulf War I, we denied that Gulf War syndrome even existed. Though we knew that it was real, it was very common, and DU was likely a major cause. We also know that any soldier in any army will crack up no later than about his 240th day of combat. Not his 240th day of deployment, but his 240th day of combat. Yet they keep returning soldiers to Iraq, where essentially every day is a day of combat. Return them for 3, 4, even 5 tours of duty. And in both Gulf War I and II, we're sending our troops into a nuclear war, and there's no way the soldiers can be protected from the lethal byproducts. Next week, we'll have the second and final part of Doug Rocky's talk, when he'll discuss where the military is shooting this stuff off, for practice or for fun, if not in battle. He'll talk about how to save money the Pentagon and the VA are denying soldiers the testing and denying them the medical care that the Pentagon and VA are in fact required to provide. Hey, DU is just like with PTSD, right? And Rocky will talk about how the Pentagon threatens and intimidates researchers and journalists that try to publish the truth about uranium-238 weapons. Let me bring up another perspective briefly. Who else is dying from DU poisoning? The wives of male soldiers. That's who. DU nanoparticles travel throughout the human body, and they can be found in every bodily fluid, including semen. Many wives of Gulf War vets have reported feeling a burning sensation when their spouses ejaculate. And malignancies associated with the reproductive system are increasing in these women, especially endometriosis. And birth defects in their children are increasing. In Gulf War I, in 1991, the city of Basra in southern Iraq was clobbered with DU munitions. Afterwards, both birth defects and cancers increased greatly in its children. In November 2004, in Gulf War II, the city of Fallujah was terribly clobbered by DU-based weapons. And since then, birth defects in Fallujah have gone off the charts. Fallujah was clobbered twice in November 2004, the second time right after the presidential elections. Everybody knew it was coming right after the presidential elections. There were at least 20,000 U.S. Marines surrounding the city right through the presidential elections, and they weren't there to provide public security. Neither of the major presidential candidates so much as mentioned what was obvious to everyone. Oh, by the way, the city of Fallujah is scheduled to get it as soon as this election is over, but we don't want to do it before the election. It might annoy the electorate. One writer, knowledgeable about DU munitions, concluded that their use amounts to 4 war crimes at once. First, the weapon is far more destructive than its military use requires. Second, its lethal effects are not confined to the place and time of battle. Third, its mechanisms of destruction include poison gas. Last, it maims and kills more innocent civilians than soldiers. We can add to that, fifth, it kills our own soldiers in large numbers. Imagine you're a U.S. soldier in Iraq or Afghanistan, part of a tank crew. Rest in peace, buddy, though I wouldn't if I were you. The tank's protective armor is made of DU, so anything hitting the tank hard is going to send a cloud of uranium into the stale air you're already breathing. Second, if the tank shoots something with its big gun, nanoparticles of uranium and other poisons will pollute the air. And the particles are so small, no air filter in the world can keep them out of your tank. And, as noted, no gas mask will keep them out of your lungs. And third, how many not-yet-used DU-tipped shells is that tank carrying around? Each is giving the soldiers a constant bath of radiation. What dose of radiation is low enough to be safe? None. Radiation exposure is cumulative over your lifetime. There is no safe dose of radiation. The great Australian anti-nuclear activist Helen Caldicott, MD, tells a story of a nightmare speaking engagement she once had. A dozen speakers were to take turns, each giving a short speech in something like a cafe. Alcohol was still being served. The audience was somewhat rowdy, working-class Australian men. Caldicott was last on the speakers list, and the previous 11 speakers had inspired the men with patriotic jingoism about love of country, winning against our enemies, God bless our boys in uniform, nuclear energy means more jobs and cheap electricity for everyone, etc., etc. Dr. Caldicott was going to argue in favor of shutting down the entire nuclear industry, including the warmongering military. And she's speaking to, I don't know, a slightly drunk Australian version of a cross between the American Legion and a Teamsters local. Tough house. She ponders, is there any way in hell to reach these people? At last she steps up to the microphone, stands silently until the room quiets down, then asks, in her most professional, ladylike voice, do you have any idea what nuclear radiation does to your testicles? They didn't, but they all sure as heck did 5 minutes later. Award-winning, unembedded journalist Dar Jamail has an idea, too. Here he tells WHUS's Dory Smith what happened in Fallujah since the U.S. smashed the city with small arms fire, DU munitions, and equally illegal white phosphorus bombs.
We're speaking with journalist Dar Jamail, author of Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. He spent 8 months covering the Iraq War. Dar, you reported from Fallujah during two sieges. Talk about the recent Interpress story about women now giving birth to infants with birth defects in Fallujah.
Yes, my Iraqi colleague Ali Al-Fadili sent me a lot of information, so we did a story on this a ways back. He managed to interview some doctors at Fallujah General Hospital in conjunction with a report that came out from an Iraqi NGO working in that city as well that showed that there's been a dramatic increase in the number of miscarriages pregnant women have been having and babies being born with horrible malformations. And the doctors believe that this is a result of the use of illegal weapons in Fallujah during the November 2004 siege. White phosphorus, depleted uranium munitions, cluster bombs, but specifically white phosphorus and depleted uranium munitions. And I had a lot of pictures sent to me, too, and IPS didn't post them, but they're horrific photos of babies with just absolutely disgusting deformations, with absolutely completely white skin that's severely wrinkled as though they're an old person when they're born, with organs on the outsides of their bodies, being born with huge tumors. My point is they're very, very similar to a lot of the photos that we started seeing out of Basra in the aftermath of the 91 U.S. war against Iraq, when so much, at least 300 tons of depleted uranium munitions were used, according to the U.S. military. And my point is that here we are. It's over 3 years now since the second siege of Fallujah and all of this weaponry was used so heavily. And big surprise, we're seeing the exact same effects in Fallujah that we saw in Basra, where in the aftermath of 91, we had the incidence of cancer. Like, for example, childhood leukemia alone increased 26-fold, not 26%, but 26-fold in the aftermath of 91 Gulf War. And I think, unfortunately, we're seeing the beginnings of that trend being repeated in Fallujah.
Phew, let's lighten up for a bit, shall we? Well, a little. Here's a song by David Rovics called Halliburton Boardroom Massacre from the album of the same name. If the narrator sounds a little distant and tinny, that's because he's dead, and the phone line from hell was installed by KBR on a no-bid contract. The speaker is a veteran of W's Gulf War II. Before dying of the effects of depleted uranium, he decides to do a good deed or two in the land of the living. Thanks for listening. New World Notes is produced at the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For the Doug Rocky recording, our thanks to Homeopathy Doctor, Trap Rock Peace Center, and the Internet Archive. For the selection from the Dar Jamail interview, our thanks to Dory Smith, Talk Nation Radio, and for maintaining the archive, the AINFOS Radio Project. The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of anyone even remotely connected with the station, though Leo the janitor says that DU reminds him of his favorite song from the old country. DU, DU, liebst mir im Herzen, DU, DU, liebst mir in Sinn. Leo, you're mocking me, Fieldschmerzen. Now let me finish the show, okay? Your comments and suggestions are most welcome. Why not send me an email to kdowst@hotmail.com. Until next week, here's wishing you a good week. Illa get to my non-carborundum, and keep the faith.